The state mandated that almost a quarter of electricity come from renewable energy by the year 2021. But first, there are some regulatory and financial hurdles. Today in Radio Times, we're going to get three perspectives on this issue. Fisherman's Energy has a proposal for a 25-megawatt wind farm off the beaches of Atlantic City. The pilot project has its critics, including the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities and the New Jersey Division of Rate Council. We'll be talking with the head of the Rate Council and the chapter director of the New Jersey Sierra Club later in the show. But first, Chris Wissman, the CEO of Fisherman's Energy, is our guest. He was the founder of Deep Water Wind and past president of Garden State Offshore Energy. And Chris Wissman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Marty, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
You're welcome. How many fishermen in Fisherman's Energy?
There are our entire board of directors is fishermen.
And why is that significant? No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, Fisherman's is kind of it's interesting because it's really a group of key ocean stakeholders that are focused on development of the ocean in an environmentally responsible and sustainable manner.
Based on their experience and expertise as fishermen themselves?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the intent is to remain being really good stewards of use of the ocean. And the thing about offshore wind is that it was really the first instance that their historical turf had been encroached upon. Just wanted to make sure that everything could be done really in the best manner that would allow multiple uses to continue.
Tell us about this proposal.
Well, this proposal really grows out of what I would say is groundbreaking legislation that Governor Christie signed in 2010. And it was really groundbreaking because since more or less the time of Thomas Edison, state utility regulatory commissions have had a single-minded focus on keeping the lights on at the lowest possible cost, right? And historically, that's meant power generated using fossil fuels. And that, in a way, really doesn't suit the 21st century issues. So what we're focused on here really is complying with legislation that sets the stage for a true evaluation of costs and benefits. And what's unique here is that the benefits of offshore wind are really substantial. They are not just environmental benefits, but they're really across the spectrum. And what this sets the stage for is the Board of Public Utilities to open their purview from looking at things just simply with that lens of lowest cost to saying what's really best for the state as a whole. Well, should the state do something like this to make the benefits really accrue to all of New Jersey?
And just picking up on what you just said, because your pilot project does have its critics, including the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities, essentially saying that the cost exceeds the benefits. Help us understand, when you talk about the benefits and even the costs, what criteria you use?
Well, the easiest end to look at is cost, right? This power is more than the traditional cost of burning, you know, coal and natural gas. So that's easy, and I think people don't really consider that that is a challenge to calculate. What is difficult and to basically get everybody to agree on are the benefits, right? So the building up from the bottom, the simplest thing to look at is it creates jobs, right? These types of projects are unusually labor-intensive. A lot of job creation. There's a lot of economic development in the state. This little project alone creates about $100 million in direct capital spending in New Jersey. It creates about 250 jobs. When you put that spending into New Jersey, it reverberates around the economy and actually creates a ripple effect that creates sort of much greater positive economic impact. So there's just simply economic development. Secondarily is environmental benefits. You no longer are pumping, you know, basically carbon and what we call as NOx and SOx. Those are basically complex chemicals from the combustion of power plants into the atmosphere. And those have an economic value that, frankly, has been disputed over the years. And so one of the issues when working with the BPU is establishing what is the best way to value the environmental benefits. But there are secondary and third benefits as well. There's increases in tourism. There's there are the benefits of lessons learned from implementing a small project before you try and do this on a very large scale.
Let me pick up on...
It really goes down the full spectrum.
Let me pick up on that, because the tourism part of this argument is that having perhaps your wind farm or other wind farms would become a tourist attraction. And to be honest with you, I don't see what the attraction is.
Right, right. No, I totally understand. And that's actually hard to appreciate until you've toured these overseas. The best example would be Copenhagen. About 10 years ago, Copenhagen had a cooperative venture to put up 20 turbines about 2 miles offshore. And that inspired actually no less than 3 different tour boats of people going out to see them. Because when you see them from shore, you generally become more interested in them. And so what we anticipate is that when you have turbines off of a tourist destination like Atlantic City, it's a natural side effect to really have people want to get on a tour boat and really learn more. But really, tourism is something that we consider is really, in a way, a distraction from the core issue, which is really jobs and economic development.
Does Fisherman's, do you have funding for this project?
We do.
Do you have enough?
We have full committed funding for this project.
And is it from where are you getting your money?
We have what is classically called sort of vendor financing. We are using a Dutch design turbine that's manufactured in China by a company called XEMC. And XEMC has stood up and said, we will fund the entire project.
Did you try to find American companies to make the turbines?
Well, unfortunately, there are no American manufacturers of offshore wind turbines. The as you know, there are not a lot of wind turbines installed offshore in the U.S., so they're either European or Asian, and that kind of leads to one of the core issues here of the value that we think we bring to New Jersey that I sort of stepped over briefly, which is that the European manufacturers have built all of their factories and they've got established supply chains really across Europe. And so what we have done with XEMC is we actually have gotten XEMC to commit to building a factory in New Jersey. And that factory in New Jersey would actually satisfy not just the domestic market, would actually supply turbines to Europe. And so what we found is that the Europeans aren't really willing to do the same thing. So the best hope for New Jersey really to get the bulk of the economic development is to lure a manufacturer like XEMC that is really trying to address these new and large markets.
Are these turbines, do they have the kind of strength that could withstand a storm like Sandy that we had, of course, bearing down on New Jersey last fall?
Right, right. Well, that's a good question. I imagine that it looks scary to a lot of people. What's remarkable about wind turbines and this entire industry, and I've learned this over the years too, is that everything is planned for the absolute worst case. So Sandy, as much as it was a horrendous storm, was actually barely even a hurricane when it hit shore. So what we are actually designed for is a Category 5 hurricane. We could have withstood winds that were 50% greater than what Sandy had to offer. And frankly, if we had winds 50% greater than what Sandy offered, I think the last thing people would be worried about is the wind turbines offshore.
This is a pilot project for how many wind turbines off and how far off the coast of Atlantic City?
So it's a pilot project for 5 turbines, and they're about 2.8 miles offshore.
And how many houses could this pilot program send energy to?
Well, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 20,000 homes. So it's, you know, relatively small for New Jersey, but that is kind of the idea of a pilot project. It is indeed meant to be something that you learn from before you do it on a big scale.
And how big a scale are you imagining?
Well, the New Jersey Energy Master Plan actually calls for 1,100 megawatts and of offshore wind by 2020. So 1,100 megawatts, so that everybody understands, is basically the equivalent of a couple of large power plants. So that is the goal, is to make an appreciable dent in New Jersey's overall power generation mix.
And would this be within the 3-mile limit of the New Jersey shore or even deeper into the ocean?
Well, those eventual bigger projects would be in what we call federal waters. So those are waters that are controlled by the Department of Interior under the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. So those are subject to an entirely different regulatory scheme.
So what are you waiting for?
Well, if you go back and look at this legislation that occurred in 2010, that was really groundbreaking, what it did essentially was set a framework for approval by the Board of Public Utilities, and it essentially delegated authority to Board of Public Utilities. And so the challenge in really working with the BPU is that this, in a way, breaks the BPU's longstanding mold of looking at power at the lowest possible cost. Now they really have to grapple with this whole new paradigm of benefits. And unfortunately, the legislation was sufficiently vague on how to look at benefits that we are basically working very closely with the BPU to help define that. And I'll say, for example, how do you define environmental benefits? All of that pollution has got lots of data. There have been many rate cases that have heard before, but exactly which data set do you use? That's subject to us basically working diligently with the BPU to agree on the exact mechanics. So we can appreciate that it takes a lot of time to evaluate all this detail. And to give you an example of that, it's actually remarkable. Our submission to the BPU was actually over 6,000 pages. So we are finding our way through that together, and it just takes some time.
But is the clock ticking on this project from your end?
It is. There is recently, as part of the fiscal cliff legislation at the federal level, there was an approval of an investment tax credit for this sort of project. And a requirement to qualify for that is that you start building at the end of this year. And the value to that of that for New Jersey is that lowers our power price very significantly. So we have a power price that will become closer to market price if we can break ground this year, and that more or less requires the BPU to make a decision in the first half of the year.
But by June 30th, something like that?
More or less, June 30th. Yeah, we need to be able to responsibly deploy capital by the end of the year to qualify for the investment tax credit.
And we almost have to say goodbye at this moment, but are there lessons that you learned from Cape Wind, I guess the short answer to that question?
Yeah, well, the shortest answer is be careful where you put the wind farms. So we think we've got an absolutely perfect location off of Atlantic City. We have unanimous agreement by the city council that they embrace it. We have support of tourism commissions, and so we think that there's probably no better place in the country to showcase offshore wind than Atlantic City.
Well, Chris Wissman, thank you so much for joining us and, frankly, getting our conversation started.
Thank you, Marty. My pleasure.
You're welcome. And he's the CEO of Fisherman's Energy. They have a proposal for a 25-megawatt wind farm off the beaches of Atlantic City. We have another guest waiting in the wings, and we want to hear from you, especially if you live in New Jersey. What do you think about wind farms, wind turbines off the New Jersey coastline? Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Phoebe Ministries supports WHYY with communities in Lehigh, Berks, Bucks, and Montgomery counties. Phoebe specializes in healthcare, housing, and services for senior adults. April 10th, the Phoebe Institute on Aging presents An Interfaith View of the Spiritual Aspects of Aging and Dying, featuring Rabbi Dale Friedman and leaders of multiple faith traditions. The conference provides spiritual leaders, healthcare, and human services professionals the opportunity to learn about the aging process across cultures. Details at phoebe.org/PIA.
You can imagine that being homeless is tough on anybody, but being older can make a bad situation even worse. We'll hear the story of an ex-Marine who's living that life and find out how he's actually trying to help other people in similar situations. It's part of the NPR series Aging Homeless, and it's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
The Kimmel Center supports WHYY and presents Emmy Lou Harris and Rodney Crowell with the Richard Thompson Electric Trio at the Academy of Music on Tuesday, March 26th. Longtime collaborators Harris and Crowell will perform songs from their new album, Old Yellow Moon. The Richard Thompson Electric Trio will also play music from their new album, Electric. Tickets available at 215-893-1999 or KimmelCenter.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking about the possibility of coastal wind farms off the coast of New Jersey. We just said goodbye to Chris Wissman, the Chief Executive Officer of Fisherman's Energy. And again, we want to hear from you, especially if you live in New Jersey. If you have property along the coastline, would you like wind farms off your coastline? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-9499. WHYY. Our second of three guests join us now on Radio Times. Jeff Tittle is the chapter director of the New Jersey Sierra Club. And Jeff Tittle, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. I'm glad to be here.
Nice to have you here. So what do you think of Fisherman Energy's project?
I mean, I think it's a good start. It's a, you know, it's a small project, but if we can't get a small project off the ground, how are we going to get to bigger projects? I mean, what people don't realize is that off the coast of New Jersey, we have the Saudi Arabia of wind. That New Jersey has the potential to meet more than half of its future electrical needs through offshore wind and create thousands of jobs while reducing greenhouse gases and air pollution. But the problem is that we have to, you know, get it moving. And if we can't get a pilot project going, how are we going to get the bigger projects? And I think that's the problem that we're facing right now. You know, our governor had supported wind. He'd signed legislation to help encourage wind, and yet we're still waiting, you know, 2 years later for the regulations to make it a reality. And I think it's a real concern, you know, given, you know, what's happened to our coast and the need to create jobs, especially in the maritime industry. So, you know, I think we've got great potential, but we're wasting it right now.
When you say Saudi Arabia of wind, what do you mean by that, Jeff?
Well, I mean that there's enough wind off our coast that we could capture, you know, at least 16,000 plus megawatts, meaning we could power half of the state's electrical needs from offshore wind, or if not more, and it would be done in a way that doesn't produce pollution. That, you know, can, you know, also help protect our coast and our coastal cities against blackouts. So the potential is there. We just have to unleash that potential, and right now we're still keeping it bottled up.
What's interesting, looking at Cape Wind, and there was a lot of controversy about Cape Wind, and some of it coming from environmentalists, even from the Kennedy family, concerned that wind farms would have a negative impact on marine life, or the birds would be flying into the turbines and hurting the bird population. Do you share any of those concerns, Jeff?
I think the biggest threat to marine life and to birds is climate change and what's happening to our planet. And the best way to combat that is through renewable energy. So I think it was very short-sighted, and, you know, I hate using the word NIMBY, but, you know, it's because you can design the wind projects in a way not to have those kinds of impacts. In fact, New Jersey has done a wonderful mapping exercise that was done under the previous administration to show where the best wind is and the least amount of impacts to fisheries or marine life or birds. The other part of it is that, you know, when you go 15 miles off the coast where the wind is the most sustainable, where it's blowing at least 60% of the time, that's where the fewer critters are. And there's also studies that show that because the windmills act as like artificial reefs, they attract plankton and mollusks and other things, that they actually help certain forms of marine life and marine mammals in particular. So I think we can design it in a way to have very little impact to birds and to marine life. And in fact, you know, in Europe, there are studies that show that the birds themselves avoid the wind fields. They see them and then they avoid them. But we can also design them with sonar so that they shut off automatically if there's a flock of birds in the area. So I think we can, you know, do it in a way that is both protective to the environment while at the same time producing very affordable clean energy to help protect the planet.
I want you to comment on the fact that the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities, the New Jersey Division of Rate Council, basically said that the costs exceed the benefits for this Fisherman's Energy pilot project. Now, we heard from Chris Wissman saying we have to rethink what we mean by cost and benefit. Can you add to what he had to say? And then I do want to get to some of our callers.
Yeah, sure. And I'll put two points out there. First point is the Board of Public Utilities has no problem in subsidizing nuclear power through the nuclear plant closure fund and stranded assets where we're paying to build, you know, paying off the construction loans of those plants. They recently approved over $2 billion in subsidies to build gas plants in the state. In fact, some of them are being built where we're going to be, you know, the ratepayers are roped into paying three or four times what's called the auction rate for those plants. So they don't have any problems with subsidies. I think there's a problem with wind because it's renewable energy versus fossil fuels and nuclear power where we seem to subsidize all the time. The second is, yes, when we do the analysis for cost-benefit, you need to look at the impact to the environment and sea level rise and storm surges as well as health and air quality benefits as part of it.
I noticed that there is a planning or certainly talking about the Atlantic Wind Connection, the idea of creating, I guess, a transmission line along the East Coast, including in New Jersey, some of it sponsored by Google. Are you heartened by that, Jeff?
Well, I have. There's a positive and a negative. The positive is that there are, you know, companies willing to invest in this wind backbone to move power around the coast. The concern I have is that if we build the line but we don't build the windmills, then we can end up bringing up coal power from Virginia or the South. So I think it's great that there are people willing to invest in offshore wind and feel that there's so many projects out there that we can put a transmission line out there, but we also need to get the windmills done. And right now, I think the failure of this administration to get the offshore wind renewable energy credit regulations in place so we know how things are going to work and that are going to cost, I think is holding up, you know, not only offshore wind, but thousands of jobs.
You're really talking about coordination, the idea that there are some big plans and we have to figure out how they fit together?
Yes, and we need to make sure that there's assurance in the market so that, you know, wind companies can borrow the money to build the projects, because, you know, that was the whole concept of having these credits that are sold on the open market so that there's a certain level of funding available from the credits as well as selling the power so that the wind companies could then go out and, you know, get the loans in place to build the turbines and put the plants up.
Well, that's Jeff Tittle. He's the chapter director of the New Jersey Sierra Club, the second of three guests in this hour of Radio Times. We're talking about the possibility of coastal wind farms off the shoreline of New Jersey, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Particularly interested in hearing from our New Jersey listeners and those of you that perhaps have property or enjoy the New Jersey coastline. Many of us do. What do you think of this project? Let me see what Bill from Princeton Junction has to say. And Bill, go ahead, you're on Radio Times. Do we have you, Bill? No, we don't have Bill. We will try, Bill.
Yes, you do.
Oh, we do. Okay, go ahead, Bill.
Yeah. All right, I muted it. There's a couple different problems with it, as I see it. First of all, is the offtake price, all right? So the price, the wholesale price of the wind power, at least what it was from the Cape Wind Project, was 20 cents or 22 cents a kilowatt hour. And so that is 10 times, the wholesale cost of electricity, or close to it, and it's four or five times the price of solar. So it's...
You're saying it's more expensive than... You're saying it's more expensive than other forms of energy, Bill.
It's not just more expensive than other green forms of energy. The taxpayers are the real people who subsidize it, because offshore wind is hugely expensive. They do it in Europe because they don't have the land. In the U.S., we have more land than we know what to do with as far as the wind capability go, and it's irrational way to spend the green dollars.
Well, fair enough. I appreciate the call to Radio Times, Bill. And Jeff Tittle, what do you say?
I think his numbers are wrong. In fact, the state of New Jersey is paying 26 cents a kilowatt hour to subsidize a plant that they've just approved in Woodbridge. The key to wind is that once you put in the facility, the price drops because operation and maintenances are so low that you don't have to keep buying you know, fossil fuels or nuclear rods or whatever to run it. And so the price drops after about 12 years. It starts declining in 15 because of that. The second is that the windmills themselves have become much more efficient, and further off the coast we have more wind. You're generating a lot more power. And the third piece is that a lot of the wind power is generated in the summertime and at peak times in the late afternoon when there's a lot of wind, and that's when we're paying actually double our normal price for wind. So we believe that wind is cost effective, especially in large scale, and is actually becoming cheaper than other forms of power, including fossil fuels.
But you're saying better, there's more and better wind on in the oceans than there is on land?
Yeah, and you don't have to then run spend tens of billions of dollars running power lines from Nebraska to New Jersey when you have it 15 miles off our coast.
Bill, thanks for the call. Let's see what Paul from Northfield, New Jersey has to say. Paul, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, your guest, I agree with him 100%. I think that offshore wind is the way of the future. And as he said, New Jersey has mapped out their wind patterns, and they know that this is a great way to produce energy. But we have a more immediate concern that we have an old coal-fired power plant here in South Jersey called the BL England plant, and current plans are to take this very dirty power plant and convert it to natural gas. People are touting, natural gas as a bridge fuel, and I think that it probably is a bridge fuel. That includes a 22-mile pipeline through sensitive land to get to this power plant. When we could build wind farm on that very location right now, we wouldn't have to worry. It's a very shallow bay area. There's a lot of land associated with it. The transmission lines are already in place to distribute the energy that's produced. There could be a solar farm there at the same time to handle peak demand. And you could take this dirty power plant offline, and instead of spending $450 million to convert it to natural gas, build a wind farm. This would help encourage the transmission lines that they want to use for offshore power. And I think that your guests are right, that we need to feed this industry and develop it here in order to answer our future energy demands without further jeopardizing the effects of global warming, such as Superstorm Sandy and rising sea levels.
Well, Paul, you made a very good case. Let me see if Jeff Tittle has anything to quibble with. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I just would add one other thing. We were actually the group that has led the fight to try to close that plant, and we've been in court and have done we've also done regulatory against that facility. We also think it's a perfect place to actually have the onshore facilities for offshore wind. You could have boats going out there to help maintain offshore wind. You also have a huge substation, so you could tie in offshore wind power right into the grid there because of the big substation. So we think that, yes, that's a good place for not only wind and solar, but also to connect the offshore wind into the grid.
Paul, thanks for the call to Radio Times. We're focusing largely on wind energy, Jeff, but I wonder about solar energy in New Jersey as well. Are there lessons from what's been going on in the state about solar energy applied to wind?
Well, I think so. We have been number two in the nation in the number of installations, and we're starting to drop, and part of it has been the administration's I don't want to say attack on renewable energy, but there is. We eliminated the Office of Climate Change. We pulled out of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative to lower our carbon footprint while providing funding for alternative energy and energy efficiency. And the governor's been balancing the budget by stealing the what are called the clean energy funds that also go for renewable energy and energy efficiency. So what we're seeing is that we're seeing a slide in both solar and energy efficiency in New Jersey, where the numbers are dropping for the first time in a decade, and the delay in wind. And I think the concern that we have is that by doing this, we have an administration I think is more concerned about attacks from the right wing of the Republican Party by Americans for Prosperity and the Tea Party than they are in moving these industries forward. So, right now we see solar also not being as robust as it should be, and actually, we were at one time producing 40 to, in the big months, 80 megawatts of solar a month in New Jersey going online, and we're down to about 17. So, unfortunately, I think the BPU is holding things up with wind, And we're seeing a decline in solar as well, and hopefully we can start making some changes to jumpstart both.
But even though the state has mandated that by the year 2021, it's supposed to get almost a quarter of its electricity from renewables?
Yes, and you have to understand that this administration also cut the goals. The Energy Master Plan that was adopted in 2009 called for 30% by 2020, and we've gone back to 22.5% by 2021. And so even though it's still a decent goal, it's not where we should be, and I think we have the potential to do a lot more here and also create a lot of jobs. And I think that's the sad part, is that at a time when our economy is hurting, at a time when people are paying too much for energy bills, we could really help jumpstart our economy through renewable energy, especially for the maritime industry that's sitting empty right now because of the superstorm.
Let me get another caller in. Looks like we have Greg from Princeton Junction. Do I have that correct? Yes, Greg, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I would agree with Jeff and with the discussion so far. For goodness sake, this is a pilot project. Let's try it and see how it works. We got to start someplace. I come originally from Western New York. I've been in New Jersey since 86. And in Western New York, we've had renewable energy from hydroelectric power for over a century. In fact, we produce so much, we actually sell it. Mm-hmm. And they are still building wind farms on the old Bethlehem steel plant and the hills. And it's fine. It's not a problem. And we actually, because of the selling, I don't think all of these things are taken into the cost. The other item I would mention was the previous speaker spoke about tourism. Not so much tourism, but the quality of life. What is the cost for the health benefits that we lose, the health potential that we lose because we have coal-fired power plants? This is something we ought to do it. We ought to try it. And we ought to do it today, not even wait for it. Why are we waiting? Mm. I don't understand.
Well, and we you're welcome, Greg. And we have a third guest who might be able to answer some of those questions. But Jeff Tittle, do you agree with Greg that it's a pilot project, for heaven's sake, is what he said?
Yeah, and I think that's the whole point, that you see how it works and then you learn from it to see what you need to adjust for the future. We do that all the time in so many different ways. And I also wanted to also say that, yes, and low-impact hydro has another big potential that we haven't really tapped. We could have wave buoys off our coast. We have companies here that have pilots projects to try to do that. We can tie the wave buoys into the wind projects, so we're generating power 24/7. We can do low-impact small turbines even on bridges along the coast where the tides go in and out. I mean, we have a tremendous potential when it comes to renewable energy. We're at the point where we were with personal electronics 30 years ago when, you know, the cell phone, you know, was the size of a small water cooler and you had to have a giant bag in your
I remember those days.
Yeah, and look where we are today. And I think it's the same thing with renewable energy. New Jersey has been in the top 10 in research and development and in capital investment and in venture capital for renewable energy. And we need to get the BPU and this administration to unleash the market and unleash the brain power that we have here, because I think we can really do a lot to grow New Jersey while protecting people's health.
Well, Jeff Tittle, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
It's been my pleasure.
And he's the chapter director of the New Jersey Sierra Club, talking with three guests in this hour of Radio Times about the possibility of coastal wind farms off the New Jersey coastline. And we have Stephanie Brand waiting in the wings. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. What do you think? Give us a call. We'll be right back.
Guardian Nurses Healthcare Advocates supports WHYY, serving the region for 10 years. These registered nurses accompany individuals to doctors, help get second opinions, and help with insurance claims. GuardianNurses.com. Guardian Nurses, lighting your way through the healthcare maze.
Last year was the hottest year in the U.S. on record. On the next Fresh Air, Justin Gillis talks about his New York Times series, Temperature Rising, examining climate change and extreme weather. Also, Jake Tapper looks back on his years as ABC's White House correspondent and looks ahead to his new CNN show, which starts Monday. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. We'll sit down with Mary Robinson, first woman elected president of Ireland, now one of the elders with Nelson Mandela and Jimmy Carter. Also, when March Madness was March Sadness, a college basketball tournament loss that still hurts 43 years later. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
The Philadelphia Speaker Series supports WHYY and is presented by Widener University, continuing its sold-out season at the Kimmel Center on March 18th with former President of Mexico Vicente Fox, sponsored by WHYY and BNY Mellon Wealth Management.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe-Aim. We're talking about the fact that there are some wind farm projects under consideration along the coast of New Jersey, including a pilot program from Fisherman's Energy. We spoke with the CEO. The Sierra Club of New Jersey supports this project, has complained that the state is dragging its feet. Just said goodbye to the club's director, Jeff Tittle. We're joined now by Stephanie Brand, and she's the director of the Division of Rate Council, saying that the cost of this project exceeds its benefits. And Stephanie Brand, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. It's a pleasure to be here.
And to our listeners, we do want to hear from you, especially those of you from New Jersey or who enjoy some of the beaches of New Jersey. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stephanie, before we find out what your criticisms are, what does the Rate Council do? What's your responsibility?
Our job is to represent the ratepayers, the people who pay the bills, and we look at these programs that are asking for subsidies from ratepayers and make sure that ratepayers aren't paying more than they need to for these projects.
And why does the Rate Council and you, I guess, oppose this Fisherman's Energy pilot project?
Well, we actually we oppose this particular project at this moment because it's just too expensive. We are actually proponents of wind energy. We were very supportive of the legislation that passed, but we are very glad that the legislature was smart enough to put into that statute a requirement that there be net benefits to New Jersey's ratepayers. And, you know, for example, on the Fisherman's Project, even though it is a pilot and even though it's only 25 megawatts, right, they're still asking for over $200 million from New Jersey ratepayers. So we're pleased to have the opportunity to take a look at the benefits, and we do look at all the benefits and we do look at all the costs in order to be able to say whether or not this brings a net benefit to New Jersey's residents.
And thinking about those $200 million, but thinking about those ratepayers, have you done the math about how much, if this were to go ahead and they were to be paying for this electricity, how much more they would be paying for it?
$200 million.
By how many people?
Well, there's a lot of people. There's no question about it. But on top of that, we're paying $5 billion for solar over the next 10 years. We just got a proposal from one of the utilities to pay $4 billion to harden our infrastructure after Hurricane Sandy. You know, there's a lot of people trying to get money from ratepayers. So if you look at all of the sort of government programs that our ratepayers are being asked for, it comes to about 27% of their bill.
I know you were listening in, and the CEO of Fisherman's Energy said that we need to think about costs and even benefits in a different kind of way and to be much more inclusive when thinking about, for instance, the cost of fossil fuel energy and the kind of impact that it has on the environment. Does that hold water with you?
Absolutely. I agree with that. And in fact, our expert that has looked at this issue very much includes the environmental benefits, also the economic benefits and things like that. The problem was that, you know, the Fisherman's proposal has changed a bunch of times. As recently as last Friday, they've changed their proposal again. And the good news is each time they do it, the numbers come down. Mm-hmm. But as we've looked at this proposal, there have been a lot of assumptions that really just didn't make sense. Like, for example, in the initial filing, they predicted that this project would attract more tourists than the Washington Monument. And that's what they were including in their benefits analysis. So we do look at everything, but we try to make sure that they're doing it accurately. And the good news is I think the statute is working because every time we push back, their price comes down. And that means we save money for ratepayers.
Is there a better project out there that you know of?
Well, I'm hopeful that the federal waters projects, which are not yet, the federal leases haven't yet been awarded, and those are not quite as far down the line. I'm hopeful that they will bring greater benefits for New Jersey. Right now, this project is one of the most expensive in the U.S. and one of the most expensive offshore projects that's been proposed. But like I said, the price keeps coming down. So if we keep doing our job, hopefully it'll keep coming down to a point where there will be net benefits.
We were hearing from the Sierra Club of New Jersey, from Jeff Tittle, the director, and his criticism is that looking at ratepayers and nuclear, the subsidies for gas plants in New Jersey, raising questions about whether, I guess, your organization is doing enough for ratepayers when it comes to this form of energy.
Well, as I said, ratepayers have committed to spending $5 billion over the next 10 years to solar. We are certainly open to spending money on offshore wind. We've actually been pretty supportive of it. The problem is we don't want to send money off to, the XEMC, the Chinese company that's financing this project, that more money to them than we need to. The fact is that New Jersey ratepayers are willing to step up to the plate and support this level of energy, but we also need to make sure that we're spending what is appropriate and not sending more money off to XEMC than we need to.
Do you see jobs in this potential project?
Well, the problem with offshore wind projects is, for the most part, you get a large number of jobs that are created, but for a short period of time. I heard Mr. Wissman say that XEMC is now committing to building a manufacturing plant in New Jersey. I have to tell you that is very new.
Really?
That is only announced in terms of the case last Friday. So we certainly want to explore that a little further and find out, because up until now they have not been willing to commit to that. We look at jobs impact. If they are committing, that's going to help. But we do need to make sure that we're not just creating a bunch of jobs for 3 months and then not going to have work for these people after that.
I do want to get to our callers, but I know you represent ratepayers. But are you also saying that when it comes to private companies, that shareholders need to have more risk when it comes to these projects?
Absolutely. That's another great thing about the statute, is that it provides that ratepayers don't pay a dime unless the facility is actually generating electricity. So it does put some risk on the developers, and I want to make sure that XEMC, which is financing the project, is, they're certainly getting paid for whatever risk they take on, and we want to make sure that they don't transfer that risk to the ratepayers.
Let me get, looks like Bob from Fairton, New Jersey, to join us on Radio Times. And Bob, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi
there.
Marty, you're great.
Oh, thanks.
Is two items. First of all, we live one-third time in Belgium, where wind energy is a popular emerging form of energy production. Belgium provides 52% of their national energy by nuclear. The wind farm was turned down in the small tourist town where we live because it was alleged to affect tourism negatively. Furthermore, it was turned down because the wind company, they come in, they put up the wind farm, and then if they go bust, who takes the wind farm down? The town would have wound up with the cost of removal or maintenance of it. And therefore, they were not willing to put up a bond to finance the removal of the wind farm were it to malfunction or need to be taken down.
Well, Bob, let me take your point only because I want to make sure that we keep focused on New Jersey. And let me get from you, Stephanie Brand. He's giving us an example of something that happened in Belgium. If and when this project goes ahead, or a project goes ahead, is New Jersey ready to make sure that a town doesn't get saddled with expenses?
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things that we've been looking at in this application, is trying to make sure that XEMC is still going to be there and isn't going to go away. We've been reviewing all of the documents that set forth the deal between Fishermans and XEMC. We're trying to make sure that there are sufficient funds and responsibility to make sure that if, God forbid, there's six dead turbines in the off the Atlantic coast, that there isn't somebody who will take responsibility.
Bob, thanks for the call. Let's see what Amy from Morristown, New Jersey, has to say. Amy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello.
Hi there.
Amy from Morristown?
Yes, go ahead, Amy.
Hi. My parents own a home in Block Island, Rhode Island, which is off the coast of Rhode Island. And they have, they're part of the community there. And they've been building wind turbines off the coast of Rhode Island. And the people who have homes on the shore, you know, shoreline, they see the wind turbines and they've been complaining about the aesthetics of the view. That it's starting to be a real controversy in Block Island and around Block Island because the properties have been, they're scared the property value is going to go down and the view is not as good. So just a comment.
No, and Amy, that also happened with Cape Wind, although that did get settled. There was some pushback from people that had property along the shoreline of Cape Cod. According to what we heard from the CEO of Fisherman's Energy, Stephanie, is that it seems that their folks living in Atlantic City are okay with this pilot project.
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, whether these things are pretty or ugly is kind of in the eyes of the beholder. I think it's reasonable to expect that some people are going to want to take a boat out and see them, and they may even, you know, come to Atlantic City to see them. But I think that it'll be a modest impact on tourism. I don't have any reason to believe it'll be a negative impact on tourism, but I do understand, and I know a lot of people feel, that the idea of seeing a whole bunch of turbines off the coast is very troubling, and I, you know, I definitely understand that. I think that the good news is that in New Jersey, at least, the federal waters projects, which are much bigger and would be a lot more turbines, those are planned for a location where they won't be visible from the shore.
And is that the project that involves Google and transmission lines up and down the East Coast?
No, the Google project is just a transmission line. They're not building any actual turbines. But, you know, that does raise another important issue, because how to get that electricity to the shore is a very big issue. That Google line could double the cost, and the other options, I don't know, they may or may not be more expensive, but all of them will require some running of a transmission line under the ocean, under the beaches, to the shore, and that's a huge issue for offshore wind that we have to address.
Amy, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well, 1-888-477-9499. I'm thinking, though, Stephanie, with new technology, whether we're talking about energy technology or not, there are always unknowables early on in the development of a technology, and even upfront costs where you don't know whether you're going to get the kind of investment, but that it's worth doing that investment because, you know, we can't rely, for instance, on fossil fuels for the next century or so.
That's absolutely true, but it's all about managing the risk and making sure that the people who stand to benefit and the people who are in a position to make it work are the ones who are bearing the risk. And what we don't want to do is have the ratepayers of New Jersey bear the risk, but then have the company that's financing it make all the money. It needs to be a shared risk. It needs to be managed in a way where, you know, if XEMC wants to finance this and wants to build this, that they're the ones who are on the hook if something goes wrong.
But do you see more renewable energy in New Jersey, knowing, of course, that there are some of these upfront costs?
Absolutely. We're actually a leader in alternative energy in the state. We're the second, we're number two in the country in terms of solar energy after California. And while, unfortunately, we don't have enough wind onshore to have significant onshore wind, that is a cheaper way of building wind energy, but we just don't have enough wind. And the only places we have enough wind are right on the shore or up in the highlands. And so that's why we're looking at offshore wind. And I think we do have to invest in it, and we do have to look to the future. And that's why we've been willing to entertain ratepayer subsidies for this. It's just that we want to make sure that it's not any more than necessary. And I think the fact that the Fisherman's Project keeps coming down shows that we're actually doing a good job in that respect.
And do you think you will, and I realize I'm asking you to predict into the future, but do you think there can be some kind of agreement on Fisherman's Energy?
You know, I don't know, because as I mentioned, the project changed again last Friday. Right now, certainly based on what we've seen, we still think it doesn't satisfy the net benefits test, but if they're able to make it satisfy the net benefits test, then that would be great and we'd be ready to go forward. I'm hopeful that the programs for the offshore wind in the federal waters, though, really are going to happen. They're just going to take a longer time to get to fruition.
But do you think the legislature needs to do something more? Do you think the governor needs to do something more? I guess whose court is this ball in?
Well, I think this statute is a model, and I know that some other states have looked at it as a model because it forces these companies to really sharpen their pencils and try to get their costs to a reasonable level. The ball has been in fishermen's court all along, and they're the ones. I mean, we are literally on the third iteration of this application. So it's not that the state has dragged its heels. It's that the state has stood its ground, and fishermen's has had to make its project better based on our position.
We heard, though, from fishermen's CEO is that he, in order to get some, and this gets complicated, some subsidies from the federal government, he needs to start construction this year, 2013.
I know, but like I said, they just changed their program on Friday. So we're doing the best we can, but as I said, it's a little bit of a moving target. So we certainly have been very diligent in our review, but when they, you know, put in a new plan on Friday, it's, you know, we can't approve it on Tuesday. We've got to take the time to look at the numbers.
Well, Stephanie Brand, thank you very much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. She's the director of the Division of Rate Council of New Jersey, the third of three guests in this hour of Radio Times, talking about the possibility of coastal wind farms off the New Jersey coastline, a particular wind farm that we were talking about, Fisherman's Energy. We began our conversation talking with Chris Wissman. He's chief executive officer of Fisherman's Energy. And we also heard from Jeff Tittle. He's the chapter director of the New Jersey Sierra Club, getting a trio of opinions talking about wind farms in New Jersey. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find much more about this program, including Facebook, Twitter, email, the archives. It's all there, radiotimes@whyy.org. I'm Marty Moscoing. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour, but stay with us. We'll be right back. Do stay with us for the second hour of Radio Times. Our guest is cognitive scientist Alexandra Horowitz, author of a new book called On Looking, 11 Walks with Expert.